Hello and welcome back to the All Time Gaming Super Show podcast, Super Show. Where today I am joined by Jamie.
Hello.
And I've also got Alex on my right.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
I'm well. I'm a little bit under the weather, as you can probably tell by my voice.
I can. What have you got wrong with you?
So many things.
Well, how do you want me to start answering that question?
You sound husky.
I'm hoping it's just a cold or a flu for now.
Hello.
Which is probably sounding horrible for you podcast listeners out there.
Taking any medicine?
Oh, wonderful.
I've taken some Nurofen.
Okay. Oh,
yeah, I'm trying to get rid of this thing.
Linctus. You need some Linctus.
Yeah, and of course the Monster Energy, which...
best medicine.
Cure for any ailment.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I would just assume it would make it 10 times worse.
Well, maybe not. Ask me again by the end of the podcast and I'll know.
You might feel better.
I always
Your body might be screwed, but
Again, I'll find out in due course. I'll let you know.
But of course, there's nothing you can do for the common cold or for like a flu or something, is there? All you can do is treat the
Well, you can get a flu jab.
But that prevents you getting it. It doesn't get rid of it.
Right. But doesn't that make you ill to then build up the antibodies? So inevitably, you're going to end up with a cold anyway.
I thought that was how it worked as well.
Yeah.
Something about white blood cells. And
so it has a deactivated, or it has either proteins in it or a deactivated virus, which tricks your immune system into then knowing how to defeat that virus.
Yeah.
Sometimes they can give you like flu-like symptoms, but it won't give you the flu.
Right.
Do you regret asking that question now that you've been given that answer?
Yeah, I know. It's a great answer. I'm glad I know. I don't think I've ever had a flu jab.
Often people, that's why people get a bit funny sometimes with vaccines, because that it can make you feel ill.
Sure.
But it's not made you ill, but your body, because when you feel hot, cold, that sort of thing, that is your body doing things to try and screw up the virus, which is why you feel too hot, too cold, because then you actively change your body temperature, which makes you an inhospitable environment for the bacteria, the virus, whatever, and so combats it. It's not actually the illness.
Still takes a few days, though. You'd think they'd have learned how to speed things up by now.
Yeah, maybe,
15
yeah.
minutes. You have your hot and cold symptoms, 15 minutes, then you're done.
Well, like with a shh, and then you're fine.
Yeah, and then you're fine straight
They're
away.
They're out here putting fingers up people's bums to see if they got, you know, any lumps up there. And they can't get rid of my runny nose.
That guy wasn't even a doctor, I tried to tell you.
He had a pair of gloves on him, so always trust two things, a fluorescent jacket and a pair of gloves. Always trust a man wearing either.
Do you know what? This is a smaller side, but a random story. I was at the Olympics in 2012, and a fellow was getting ejected, who was in like the full fluorescent jacket. He had the pass and everything.
Really?
Because he'd made it himself. But he'd got in, he'd watched a whole load of the event, and then they'd realised that he had a fake pass, and he wasn't one of the marshals. But they were genuinely impressed with how good it was. But I think it was the fluorescent jacket sold it.
Yeah. Wow. You could get in anywhere with a fluorescent jacket.
Steven Spielberg presents Catch Me If You Can 2.
This little fella. Into the Olympics.
And well, then get kicked out.
Despite what you guys are probably thinking listening to this podcast, we're not going to be continuing talking about health and anti-vaccines and things like that. We're actually going to talk about gaming.
This was
gaming.
A health-based podcast.
We're maybe here to one week. People.
Although it does roll in because viruses can often cause a zombie outbreak.
Well, that's right. Today we are talking all about zombies. But before I wanted to get into the main crux of the conversation, I just want to say, if you want to send us any kind of comments, questions, you can do over at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at All Time Gaming TV. And then you can also leave a comment on the YouTube video where you can see this podcast as well. And this podcast can also be found, if you want to listen to it on the go, on Google Podcasts, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, I think, is a thing. Spotify, it's everywhere. So you can go and find it and listen to it on the go. Before jumping again into our main conversation, what have you guys been playing? Let's have a discussion. What have you been playing
last week? Shall I get my thing from last week out of the way first?
I think you should.
So I think there's one game that we've all been playing, but it kind of ties nicely into our main talking point today.
Yeah.
It does. So to get this one out the way early, I was in Los Angeles.
Oh!
Yeah, in fact, it was... Was it this time last week?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was this time last
week. LA.
Courtesy of our good friends at 2K.
Shout out
2K. Yeah, 2K UK specifically.
What 2K
do you call,
UK?
What do they call LA? You know, like you've got the Big Apple, the Windy
City. Sin City.
City of Angels?
City of Angels.
What's Sin City?
Is Las Vegas Sin City?
Oh, yeah, might be.
I feel like it should be called the Flat Pancake because it's all very flat.
The Flat
Pancake. nothing to do with IHOP or
they
Denny's.
They sell pancakes and it's flat.
Right.
The Big Apple, the flat pancake.
California, is it the Sunshine State as well?
Sunshine State.
LA.
That was Arizona.
City of Angels, right? City of Angels.
City of Angels. So I was in the City of Angels to attend the Borderlands 3 gameplay reveal event.
Oh, hell yeah.
How was that?
It was good. You know, there's been a lot of weird talk around Borderlands 3 in the last couple of weeks, because it feels like every time they do something publicly, there's some massive fallout, whether it's a poorly worded statement about microtransactions or the alleged possession of... underage cam girl porn. You know, all kinds
one
of
one or
things,
the other.
All Randy. Kinds of things firing off. But really, I was just excited to get there and actually play the game, because ultimately that's what we're going to be dealing with come September. And I was happy. I was impressed. We did a six list around the time. Worth checking out if you want to know more about Borderlands 3 and the event in general. But I think my main takeaway was that I was actually in the camp of wanting Borderlands 3 to be a little bit more different than anything we'd seen before.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, maybe the formula was getting a bit old, especially by the pre-sequel, which I basically didn't even play for all intents and purposes.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, you should have done. That was one of my favourite. That's one of my favourite Borderlands. Yeah, beat number two.
What do I know?
And I'm currently playing it at the moment.
How you find it?
And drabs. Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it more than two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, obviously, aside from the fact that, you know, there's no oxygen or mechanical low gravity like there is in pre-sequel, you both might be glad to hear, and I think a lot of fans, I should say, will be glad to hear that Borderlands 3 is seemingly more of the same. But not necessarily in a bad way. It's definitely bigger. It's definitely broader. There's a lot more going on, but they're definitely making a Borderlands-ass Borderlands game.
Right.
That was my main takeaway from the event. But it felt very good to play. We live-streamed it for a whole hour and a half, so you just want to see an hour and a half of raw gameplay. Not my best performance, because I'm trying to re-chat at the
you
time.
You did fine.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it was good. I was watching. I was in the chat.
Yeah, I saw you. Thank you.
And I watched the whole thing, and I didn't. Nothing stuck out, and thought, oh, actually, you need to be playing a lot better than you are.
That's good.
Because it was really good. It was really entertaining.
I watched you play Days Gone on live stream the other day.
Let's not.
I think your standards for quality on live streams are maybe a bit lower than mine.
Maybe
two hours in. Press R1 to roll, Steph. Oh, yeah. Is that how you do it?
Oh,
Jesus.
Oh, is that what you can do to dodge out the way of enemies?
But yeah, Borderlands 3, I honestly think they're on the right track. The fluidity of the gameplay also stood out to me. You know, using the range of weapons and actually the skills and abilities in a way that I hadn't really done in previous entries for whatever reason. I just thought it played really well. Okay. Like, they're making the best looking, best playing Borderlands they've ever made before. So if you know you like Borderlands, there's absolutely nothing to be afraid of.
It's a bit of a weird one for me, this, because I obviously watch your footage and then we did the I watch your live stream and then we did the six list on it, and I've seen some of the PR stuff that's come out. I suppose one of the things I'm worried about is exactly what you said. It's more of the same from what we've seen before for Borderlands. But it's really hard to differentiate yourself when you come out with something so unique anyway, which I think Borderlands was originally. Like, how do you reinvent something so different? Because you'd have to, you know, go too far in another direction maybe. But I am a little bit worried that it is going to be too samey. Just look better, be slicker. Especially if I can tie it to the release of Rage 2, which comes out next week.
It does, jeez.
Which to me is looks like it's changed in masses of ways where it definitely needed to change.
Yeah.
Because of course, when Rage originally came out, it was around the time of like Borderlands, and I think you had Fallout 3, and it seemed to be a little bit of a takeoff of those games anyway. Mm. But they found their own direction, whereas maybe Borderlands are stuck with this way of doing it, this way of being a Borderlands game, which I worry for them a little bit.
I do too. Maybe there's something to the argument that actually that genre has progressed so much in the form of Destiny and The Division and so on and so forth, that making a game that's very similar to the old ones is actually weirdly unique now in that genre.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe it's a weird reverse psychology thing.
Interesting but idea, yeah.
The other thing I realized when I was out there is that you should never underestimate the amount of people who fucking love Borderlands.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch the Gearbox presentation where Randy Pitchford is on stage, and I was sat in the audience for that. And
I tried to look out for you. I wanted to take a screenshot.
I think you'd probably see the back of my head at a few points, but you'd have to know exactly where I was sitting.
Yeah.
This is a very dark room, and I didn't stand up for understanding your motivations. There's one point.
Why did you not?
I will not stand.
Randy Pitchford didn't do any magic on stage this time. I wanted him to do a card trick.
That's point number one. Steph had got a bang on. I was waiting for a little card trick. Didn't pull one out of the bag. Literally. The other issue was, he brings all the Gearbox employees, that's my phone, apologies, on stage, and everyone's like, yeah, God, celebrate Gearbox, give these guys a round of applause. And you know when people are starting to stand up in drips and drabs?
Oh, yeah.
But you look around, you're like, people aren't committing to this.
It's not a full standing ovation.
And so you tell yourself, you make the mental decision, I'm not standing up here. Like,
right.
This is a yes or a no. This is an in or an out situation. And I'm out. On this occasion, I'm out. And then slowly but surely, as seconds tick by, and fucking everyone is standing up. Before you know it, there's an entire row of people stood up, and I'm just sat there. And I think I had my arms folded because I try and keep my arms to myself when I'm sat quite close to
but
other people.
But the body language is just saying, I am not impressed, yeah. Randy Pitchford.
And I still remember the moment it flashed across my brain. If a camera pans over this audience right now,
it would be the
I
best.
Am fucked.
Yeah. Screenshot. I would have screenshotted that. That would have been shared on social media.
Exactly, because I knew Steph would have gone mental with
it. Who is the outlier who refuses to stand for yeah. But I'm kind of with you, right? Because you can be definitely impressed with like the Borderlands games of the past, and they've been a fantastic franchise, and I love playing the games. But when people, and nowadays there does seem to be this idea at a press conference, oh, stand up and clap for, like, do a standing ovation. It's almost like because you're there. And
yeah.
It's like, should I give a standing ovation when I've not seen the results? It doesn't really make
exactly.
much sense.
Exactly. And you know what the other element of it was? And this is maybe, hopefully I'm not telling tales out of school here and saying things I'm not meant to say, but I'd been at that event the day before for the sort of offline capture-based sessions, not right. the live stream stuff. I'd seen that presentation twice already. That was my third time watching that presentation. And the audience had changed every time.
Right.
And that final day, that third presentation that I was watching, the one that was streamed live for everyone, far and away the most hyped up. Like, you could tell that was a day where they're like, let's get all the streamers in, let's get all the fans in, let's get all the big guys.
Right.
Let's give them more masks. Let's give them more swag. They had some guy, an MC, before the stage show went live, hyping everyone up, saying, what are you going to do when Randy Pitchford comes out? Everyone goes, woo! And so by the time it goes
James
live,
just there folding
I was like,
his arms.
This is bullshit, man.
I get that angle, and I love going to those events, and I genuinely like enjoy all of that sort of stuff. But for me, you're right. It's the difference between like being excited for a presentation and being into it versus over the top, like standing ovations, everyone yeah. losing their minds. You can, don't get me wrong, you can lose your mind at like an awesome trailer. You can go crazy for something that you think is really good. But when it's more of that, just for, you know, oh, woo, Gearbox, woo, random right. picture, be like, let's calm down a little bit. Let's rein it in. Because what if the game is not as good as
you? and this is the issue, because I think us here at ATG, we're actually kind of unique in that we walk this really weird, you know, tightrope, in that when we go to an event like that, you look at the badge I had to wear to get into that event, it said influencer. Like, yeah. we run a YouTube channel, and yeah. when we go to events in that capacity, we're kind of influencers. I hate using the word, but that's what they think we are.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas we come from actually a relatively corporate environment and corporate background where, you know, doing things right and proper is kind of the way we go. So when you go to an event where you feel like, they are really making sure I enjoy this 90 minutes of gameplay. You're almost like, I'm not going to say like it feels dirty or anything like that, but you can tell when an event has been very specifically put on and very specifically tailored to, you know, give people as good an experience as they can have around the game as well as within the game itself.
Sure.
And you kind of, I am always careful not to buy into that stuff too much.
Would you forgive them that, though, purely for the fact that it is a PR
event?
Oh, 100%.
Okay, 100%. Yeah. I'm just saying, for me personally,
yeah.
I'd feel strange if I was the one that was like, if I put on the mask and and I'd worn the jacket and I was screaming, woo, Randy Pitchford, yeah, child porn.
And then, it's not really us, is it? I suppose it's like you're saying, it's not really us. We're more of, I think, like you say, We're gamers firstly.
Exactly.
We were already making videos for YouTube. We moved into the gamer space. We weren't kids in a bedroom who played games and then suddenly got let into this world.
Which is why I would have felt uncomfortable if that had been my reaction. And then 5 minutes later, I'd gone and sat down at like a PC and told literally thousands of people, like, oh, yeah, and like you want to make sure it's as honest, as real opinion as possible.
Sure.
Because it wasn't like sponsored. They didn't pay us. We didn't have
to. No, they just invited us to play the game and go to LA.
And so you kind of want
to
be impartial. Yeah, luckily, the game is good.
But I think that's the best way to be, is impartial. Because, as you said, you don't want to give a false impression to the people that are watching you saying, this is the greatest game ever. If this is the only game you buy this year, then you wouldn't have wasted your money. Because you have to be as honest as we can.
Well, I think to be fair to Gearbox as well, like that, as Jamie just said, that was a no preconceptions like event. They didn't invite us there and said, you need to make content, blah, you need to do it like this. It was literally like, sit down, play the game, stream it, and just say what you think. And I think which we all know you would have done anyway.
Yeah.
Which I love it when companies do that. I think that's the most honest way of framing that. Yeah. Even with the hype, even getting people excited, as long as they allow you, they're not just getting people in who they know are going to say,
yeah,
this is amazing, as long as they know that it's going to be honest things.
And,
yeah,
and I will say, because obviously I was part of the UK contingent of people that were brought out there, and you look at, and I actually met some of the other people who were being brought out. This was not like a tailored list. Let's find people who are pro Borderlands.
No.
Like, our channel has never necessarily been pro Borderlands.
No.
You know, it was a good, even spread of people. And while we're talking about sort of away from the game, I will say the event itself, super well run. Like, one of the most best organized and just fluid experiences I've ever had.
We've been to some slightly less well-run events, haven't we?
We've stood outside, you know, arenas and halls or whatever for like what's felt like 2 hours while they figure out how to get 10 PCs up and running to let people play broken builds of bad games. And luckily, this was not that.
A company that will not be named went to a launch event and they basically said, oh, we're really sorry, we forgot to be on the list, and now we're at full capacity, so you need to just go away. And we were like, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
I stood in a queue once for Sea of Thieves before that was released for 3 hours because they couldn't link up all of the Xboxes. Ooh. Together,
you really wanted to hours.
Right, I did, yeah, very early on for that one. But yeah, big shout out to in particular the UK contingent of 2K and our good friend Matt for all the help with that one. It was a fun time. Glad good. We got to do that.
I'm from seeing you play it. Like, I'm genuinely looking forward to it. Like I said, my only slight little is going to be the difference between, is it different enough?
Yeah,
because just to add a little bit. I think Red Dead 2 for me was not that much of a departure at all from Red Dead 1. It was just, it had gone with the time. So better graphics, better gameplay, mechanics were better, blah 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 blah, and it was a phenomenal game. As long as Borderlands 3 does all of those things right, I think it will be a fantastic game. I suppose there's the slight caveat that it could feel too samey and that they haven't improved enough on the previous entries. But I still remember that advert from the very first game, like in Cage the Elephant, No Rest for the Wicked playing, and the bus driving along hitting a skag. Like, that was, and that game was phenomenal. Like, I played that local co-op with my wife, sitting in my flat, and I fucking loved the shit out of every minute of that.
I think you can still play this one, local co-op, as well.
I love that so much. Like, I will be there. Me and the wife will be, the kids will be asleep, we'll be there playing Borderlands 3.
The one big thing I thought from the event is, who's the guy on stage with Randy Pitchford? Mike Smith?
Annoyingly, I don't know his name. It could be Mike
Something
Smith. That sounds very generic.
He reminded me so much of the bus driver, as in the bus driver was probably modelled after him.
Visually? Yeah. I was going to say voice-wise, not...
No,
not
voice-wise, really no, not at all. But visually, he literally looked like the bus driver.
Honestly, I didn't make that comparison in my head. He was really cool, though. I didn't actually get to talk to him, but he came across well on stage. And there were also just a bunch of Gearbox employees walking around all the different PCs and all the little stations. And I spoke to one of them he wasn't allowed to tell me everything.
Right.
But super nice dudes, guys and gals.
Those guys walking around behind you on the street, and we were getting so nervous that we're just going to kick you off. And then he spawned hundreds of guns.
That was the dude I spoke to.
That was so
good.
I was
trying to pick his brain, but then I realized, I think I was making him nervous because I kind of asked him, what Gearbox, because he'd been at Gearbox for 12 years.
Yeah.
And I asked him what games he'd worked on before, and he didn't want to answer. And I was like, I wonder if that's some weird thing where the answer is like, yeah, Aliens, Colonial Marines. And,
no one
did a bit. Did a bit of work on Battleborn. And I was like, okay, shouldn't have asked.
I think I have to, from not just me, but from the fans as well, we have to give you a massive shout out for your staying power. When they were kicking people off left and right and you were there going,
they had to drag me
away. I'm not leaving. I'm just keeping going.
I was sitting there on the edge of my seat because people behind you, they were just all standing up and leaving, turning off their machines.
Cowards. Cowards. A lot of them.
Until the point you were like, okay, I think I'm actually going to have to go now.
I just felt like there were like five people standing around me, and then they're watching you play, and they're also listening to you. Like, it's weird live streaming in a room with 300 people in it. It's very unusual.
Did I make it up that you at one point said, I'd like to see them try and drag me away? I'd like to see them try, like, fight me off the machine.
I can either confirm or deny.
Loved it.
I'm here to make great TV.
And you do, mate.
And it was. And it was brilliant TV.
Yes. Thank you to everyone who tuned into that, by the way.
Yeah, it was good.
Means a lot. And the Sixth Sist afterwards.
So, Jonesy, what have you been playing? Because I think this will be a nice segue onto speaking about our main topic. Because you are, from what we've heard, quite a big fan of this game, aren't you?
What? Okay, I don't know. Big fan is probably a little bit too far. I suppose reactionarily, if that's a word.
You've just made probably it one. Just, I like
made
it.
That one.
I maybe am a big fan of Days Gone, is what we're talking yeah. about here. Purely because I feel like it's been given a bit of a rough ride by the mainstream critics, which I'm sure yeah. we'll get into.
Yes, we will.
But I genuinely have enjoyed my time with it so far. There is a lot of jank.
Like, yeah.
I love that word, jank. It just describes what it is so well.
It's a perfect word in
it
some
is a
respects.
Perfect word. Like you can feel jank in a game. Like you go, oh, janky, or you can see it, and it's got both of those. It feels it and looks it.
Yeah. Yeah. Jank is almost an onomatopoeia where you're like, oh, I know what you mean, jank.
It's hard edged. It's like yeah. a shape to jank that works with certain games, and with this, it really does. There is jank to it in a lot of areas, and it isn't just that. It's also got issues with storytelling, with the way the dialogue's delivered, and just like random other stuff. But do you know what? I am a fan of zombie games in general, and as an open world, what are they called? Like Hell's Angel, riding around in, zombie infested. I don't know what state it's supposed to be set in. Like a
Oregon, I think.
Is it Oregon? It's like a quite hilly mountainous state with like trees and all sorts. I think there's a lot to that I like about the game. It feels pretty cool. They've integrated kind of stealth into it, but it's not overbearing, generally speaking. There are some missions where that are awfully boring, where it forces you to do it, which I'm not that into.
Well, the first mode, well, I played a motorbike chase.
Oh, they're one of the worst elements of the whole game.
And it just felt so slow. Slow and unexciting.
The way that you are hamstrung to sort of drive at this given speed behind, yeah. and then you use it like you lock on your weapon or your yeah. pistol, I think it is, to the back of the gun, and you can shoot them a certain number of times to take them out. It is straight out of a frigging PlayStation 2 era
yeah.
like, horrible game. I don't know what they were thinking. And I think we also found out when I jumped on the stream with you that if you get in the water, another element they've
oh, yeah.
taken from
this
games
is crazy.
Is
you
have
can't
a
swim, right?
You can swim, but a meter oh. pops up that goes down in about 3 seconds. So you're swimming, like, you know, like an air meter, right? But you're swimming on top of the water. The meter goes like is there on screen. Suddenly, just goes disappears, and then you die.
Yeah, and then you drown.
You haven't even got on the water.
Is there like a drowning animation?
Yes.
Or is it just
yeah.
cut to black?
No, it's a drowning animation cut to black, and then you're...
and you sink, and your character's kind of
so he can tread water for
water.
3 seconds. Yeah. And so like, you know what? Fuck it, I'll just drown.
I've already invoked it one time in this thing, but it's Red Dead Redemption 2 levels of what happens when you get in water. It's mental. Like, it's awful.
Yeah.
Or GTA is probably
yes,
the best
early,
comparison.
Like early GTAs.
It's,
yeah.
I don't understand. Like, I'm like, why have they done this? The water's not... It's not a big body of water. And they've already got the animation for swimming. Just let me swim across the fucking lake.
Very unusual.
It's super unusual. It doesn't make any sense. So we did it on purpose to see what would happen.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's horrendous. Yeah. That being said...
yeah.
I think the elements I do like about the game... are the things that probably that I liked in a game like Undead Nightmare as well. So you've got hordes of zombies, they run after you, not the hordes, but hordes as in they're just scattered around and you can get quite a group of them following you. You can like run away, turn around, do some headshots, you can drop grenades, molotovs, blow up things in the world, so gas canisters and fuel canisters to take people out. You can set traps, and there's this whole, you know, open world zombie fair, which is just fun, and I just enjoy it. And the motorbike elements, I think are often very well done. I think we talked about in the stream, you can stop accelerating basically and just coast your bike with your feet. You can turn your headlamp off, so you can sort of sneak into areas with your bike, sneakily refuel it, and then like gun it, and all the zombies suddenly know you're there. And this, you can change mufflers so the distance between you and them is changed. All those elements have been done, I think, very, very well. The problem is when you then branch that out to meeting with other people, NPCs in the game, mission types, all of that stuff almost feels like it was done by a different team to me.
Hmm.
So I don't think that's the best element. But there's for me, there is a potential of a good game there.
Yeah.
With that zombie world, open world stuff. But hey, I know we're going to get into it and we're going to talk about zombie games more, but I think it's pretty good so far. Maybe I like it more because other people don't like it, and I'm trying to find things, trying
to
defend
you
it.
You do that sometimes.
I do that. Yeah. Yeah, it's like when you eat something that someone's made, and it's like, and someone says, "Oh, this is disgusting," and you're like, "Oh, it's, do you know what? It's not that bad. It's not as bad as they're saying. I've had worse."
You get it with movies sometimes, where like I got it with Venom and I got it with Hellboy, where the reviews came out and it was getting trashed, and I was like, but what if it's just fine? Like,
what if it's
fine?
What if it's fun? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm happy it exists. Let's put it that way.
That's nice.
Whereas I've put other games, I'm like, I don't, I'm unhappy this game was
put
ever
put that
made.
On the box. I'm happy this
I'm
exists.
Happy this exists.
Alex Jones.
It's not, I think the biggest problem then is that it's not to the pedigree we would expect from a Sony PlayStation exclusive title.
Right.
I think that is the biggest
bit of an
issue.
Elephant in the room.
But do you think that's because it's Ben Studios, isn't it? That,
yeah.
That kind of bit off more than they could chew with jumping straight into a PlayStation exclusive? So they've got some pretty big boots to fill.
I mean,
with the last ones,
I think it's more that the jump up, you know, to from what they were doing before, working a lot with the Vita and the PSP,
yeah,
to making a big AAA first party exclusive on the PS4, and I guess, you know, the PS4 Pro and whatnot. I think that was where the jump up was, and maybe they did bite off more than they can chew.
It's a different skill set, I suppose, because the way you make games for those handheld consoles, like, you don't have the sort of fidelity that you have with the games made for the bigger systems. So maybe one of the they lack a certain finesse that you need on those, you know, in a full-fledged AAA title, which is what this is supposed to be. But it doesn't feel like that's what it is.
Yeah.
But no, you know, hey, I've been enjoying it. I will continue to play it. And the things that are the little bugbears, I hope they'll get patched out. If they don't, I suppose I'll just have to live with them. But I'm sticking with it. I might not stick with it for the full 60 hours because that seems a little crazy
God,
to me.
It's long. Or so I've heard, at least.
But, and that's just story. 60 hours worth of story to finish?
I think...
Or is that going into side missions and
I think it's 100%ing I think it's 40 kind of to 60 for the story, depending on how much stuff you're doing around the outside of the story.
Right.
Which is very, very long still.
Yeah. It also ties in that element of it ropes you into almost doing side mission-y stuff as part of the main quest. As in, you can't just hammer out the main story. You've got to go to from here to there, which means you're going to have to interact with this element, and you're going to have to do that. So I think it's, you know, a little bit tied together. I think it's necessarily as differentiated.
Sure. Well, it was from what you said before about speaking about zombie games as a whole, I wanted to go into kind of the oversaturation of zombie games on the market. I mean, there has been so many zombie games in the past.
There have been many.
And then now you've got Days Gone and you've got World War Z that pretty much came out together.
Yeah.
That were almost, in my eyes, our horde is better than your horde. It was all around the horde mechanic.
Yeah, and actually in Days Gone, it's not that important. It's kind of it seems like it's a bit...
It's just there to
compete. I think it gets more important towards the end of the story.
Right.
Because I know there are specific, like, named and specifically located hordes.
Okay.
That there's all right. a finite amount of them.
Right.
But that's when you're getting to the point where it's like, yeah, there's 300 zombies.
Because the idea
you remember that demo that they showed in 2016 of the sawmill?
Yes.
Like, that's still in the game, and there's still a horde there.
Right, yeah, so it feels like it's an important element, but maybe it doesn't. I thought it might be... so you know how sort of Left 4 Dead with it, where that was an intricately linked to, like, every... You'd be in a level and this would happen.
Mm.
I suppose I'm not far enough in the game to be in those, go through those sections yet. It feels like at the moment there, I know they're there, I can defeat them, I can finish them off, but it's not really making... I haven't been made to do it yet.
You will eventually.
Yeah, sure.
You will eventually.
How many hordes have you taken out?
I've run away from
complete hordes.
I'm terrible with open world games in that I do a hell of a lot of open world stuff, and I'll be going around doing side missions, just exploring. So I've been doing far too much of that.
Sure,
I must admit at the moment.
How many of you have played World War Z? Is it just me?
I've not played it.
I wanted to. I couldn't afford it when it came out, but I thought it looked interesting, and I wanted people to play it with. Was the other thing.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of those games because of its co-op nature. It's just to go over a quick kind of summary. It's a four-man co-op experience where you make your way through linear levels, taking on zombies, and then getting stopped by kind of these small instances where you have to activate a horde and then you have to defend an objective while the horde's coming at you. But it's very interesting in a sense that it is basically, you've just mentioned it, Left 4 Dead, but with modern-day graphics, modern-day kind of stat building. Which makes me think, with things like Back 4 Blood coming back and making a return, do we need more zombie games? Why is the zombie an easy go-to enemy on the modern-day market? Why not aliens?
I mean, yes, it is definitely still an easy go-to, and I think that's why there are so many of them, because there are lots of video games nowadays, we've talked about many of them already in this podcast, that need that fodder enemy, you know, that needs... They don't want that kind of that weird emotional attachment that comes with killing humans. Like, it would feel strange if 500 humans were running at you and you were mowing them down with an NMG.
Sure.
Like, you almost need...
Well, of course, in Days Gone, they're not zombies, but they're...
Well, yeah, they're the freakers. But they're no longer human, I think, is the key thing.
Yes.
And so I feel like there's still, like, game developers still need this kind of, this hook where they say, here's this non-human enemy that we can, you know, reproduce ad nauseum, that people can mow down with no regard for their well-being and no emotional impact whatsoever. And they need to be, if they're scary, if there's a sense of fear around them, then that helps as well. I think
that is a great point. I've never thought of that. Like, what would you do in a game where they have 300 unarmed people, right, just humans running at you, and you're just mowing them?
But wasn't that a big problem with something like, was it Resident Evil 5, where the zombies were so comparable to humans that it actually caused
people didn't like
it.
I remember. I think Resident Evil 5 was one that also had issues because of, like, it had race issues,
right?
Because it was set in Africa, and
there
was some stuff that wasn't handled particularly well,
right?
So that might be a bit of a fringe kind of example,
sure.
But there's definitely something to it where, like, you take any of these games, especially Days Gone or World War Z or Left 4 Dead, and replace them with humans for a second,
it becomes
an unusual experience, because there are still so many games trying to make us feel strange and deal with the consequences of killing other human beings.
You become the oppressive force in that game then, because if you're the one taking out hordes of people, then you have, I suppose the question is, what's their motivation? Why are they acting like this? Like, are you the bad guy? Whereas with a zombie horde, it's, no, it's obvious they're trying to eat everyone's brains. Come on. It's straightforward.
Exactly. And then that also ties into AI elements where you look, Days Gone is a game that does have both freaker enemies and human enemies.
Yes.
But human enemies, when you fight them, it's in much smaller doses, you know, 10 to 15 people at a time at a camp. Stealth is usually very helpful. Mm. They have, you know, routes that they walk, and they have weapons and things like that. When you have zombies, it's kind of this foregone conclusion that their AI is going to be very simple. They're going to see you. They're going to run at you. You know, they're not going to have any weapons because they can't hold anything.
Yep.
And all they want to do is melee you. And I think it just creates this very different game dynamic that is desirable for some developers. And the issue you'd have is, if you remove zombies from the equation, what do you replace them with?
Yeah. Also, an unarmed human shambling through the world, and then you go up to them with a spiked baseball bat and, like, smash them in their face. It seems more Manhunt than game like...
I still remember The Last of Us, which is, again, another game with human enemies and, you know, virus-infected once-human enemies. The first time I stealth-killed another human in The Last of Us, and Joel's kind of got his arm around his neck, choking him out, and the guy's, like, struggling, his legs are kind of scrambling.
It's visceral,
and it's like, this is heavy.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't meant to feel good, and it doesn't.
And the way they managed to pull that off, I think, is that they make those human enemies are so... unlikable, in that they build the whole thing of, because they're cannibals and they're, like, they murder people and they're horrendous, and so you almost feel like these are the worst people ever. Like, I am saving me and my surrogate daughter, or, you know, to get from sort of where I need to go.
And I think,
I suppose, is the difference.
Jonesy actually touched on the other interesting element there, which is that you need to create when you want players to kill a certain enemy type en masse and not feel anything around it, you need to create a certain sort of vitriol toward them, which is why I think one of the only other examples of an enemy type that's grounded in, like, a human that people have been able to design games around where you kill loads of them is Nazis.
Because
you get games like Wolfenstein where no one's going to bat an eyelid if you blow a Nazi's head off because they're a fucking Nazi.
Who gives a shit about Nazis? That's it, yeah.
Nobody. Which is why, hey, Call of Duty smashed it when they thought, what's the best of both worlds? Nazi zombies.
But then don't you think games, in general, need some kind of emotional connection to keep you hooked?
I don't think they do for the fodder. Because it's a big thing in movies, isn't it, where you stick a helmet on a soldier and suddenly where you can't see their face, and suddenly you can kill thousands of them and you don't give a shit. So Stormtroopers, obviously, a good example of that. You look at a film like Equilibrium was the most, I think, bait is the word I would use, where they wore crash helmets with blacked out visors, effectively. So he murdered, is it a film but not a game, but he would kill them.
It's Christian Bale, right?
It's Christian Bale. He would kill them in glorious ways, doing these sort of silly gun carter dance moves.
I remember.
And you didn't care about the enemies because they were all in black. They had helmets on that was all blacked out visors. Yeah. Games could go for that.
The other one I remember for that is games is the Hellgast in Killzone.
Yes.
Who are, again, like the most kind of, like, uniformed.
And they're framed as they're basically space Nazis.
Yeah,
space and you're Nazis. Right, with they have the mask. And they've even
Nazis
done a
in space.
The awesome thing I think they did with the Hellgast was they gave them, like, six red eyes. So you had, like, two main red eyes, and then you had, I think if I remember right, you have two, like, two sets of red dots below them. So you almost get like an insect-like, helmeted Nazi spacefaring, whatever.
So it almost dehumanizes.
Yeah.
Or it does completely dehumanize.
Did they have six? Are they like six? It was just, maybe it's just two.
I don't know. It sounded a little bit like you're describing the Predator, but I don't mind either way. I know
that they had like red. They had like red eyes on their helmets or something like that. They had like it completely dehumanized them, like Steph said. It made them into this weird other thing, which, yeah, was glorious to shoot them in the face.
And you want to talk about sort of like an emotional connection and things like that.
Sure.
I think a lot of these games also do is they're very careful to have these zombies being an enemy, but still try and create this us versus them narrative, where a lot of the times we get our emotional connections and the impactful moments through the protagonist and the player character and their relationship with the NPCs around them, which again is something that Days Gone is flirting with the whole time, is that you're still indiscriminately killing, you know, other drifters and marauders and hundreds upon hundreds of zombies, but it's saying, right, we're going to develop our characters and we're going to create impactful moments by having the player character, Deacon, have relationships with the people around him and, you know, the some of the trouble and the circumstances around those relationships. That's where we're going to get our moments, and that's where we're going to differentiate from the fact that, hey, yes, this guy did just use, you know, a light machine gun to kill literally hundreds of technically living things.
Yeah.
But look at his best mate, you know, his arm hurts.
Boozer.
Yeah, Boozer. Some of the best, or maybe worst, names in
worst,
video games.
I think.
Deacon St. John.
It's Boozer's name's got to be like Bob Buzanelli or something like that. And
Bob Boozer. No, his name's William, I think.
Bill.
William.
Bill Buzanelli.
Yeah.
Bill Boozer.
There's a guy later on in the game called Iron Mike. And he's got a friend called Schizo.
We're going to start calling you Monster.
You reckon?
It's literally just going to be Monster.
Can
for
we
you,
call
Jamie.
Me? Can we call me the Beast? Do they still say Unleash the Beast? They do still say Unleash the Beast.
There you go.
Yeah, the Beast.
I'll be the Beast.
Well, yeah, I think you made a very interesting point in terms of things like Days Gone, The Last of Us, that are very much single-player story-driven games, and it takes more than just the zombies to sort of entice an emotional connection with you. But when it comes to World War Z, you haven't really got that.
True.
So the mission I played, for example, was there was a voiceover of saying, save us, we're on the bus, help us get to this place. You didn't see that person, you just heard them as a voice, and it was a very generic voice. So I think, for me, certainly, those emotional moments come from you playing with your friends.
Yeah.
So in a game like that, there's four of you on like challenging difficulties, modes, hard modes, that kind of thing. And the emotional connection, I think, is you completing a section or completing a level.
Yeah, for sure. And if you say, like, if it's a busload of people that you're trying to save.
But then I don't think that comes into it, because that's just a generic mechanic on that map.
But that's kind of, I suppose, the rough impetus for why you're trying to, what you're doing, why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And games get pilloried a bit for using tropes and things, but you have to, in a sense, because how the hell do you... How do you connect a player to a situation and immediately get a visceral response? And the easiest ways to do it are things like Last of Us. I mean, Jesus, you kill his daughter in the very beginning of the game, and then you get a complete understanding of why this guy is fucked for the rest of the game. You take even Days Gone, right? Although they have a very similar intro, although you don't get to play it.
Well, strangely so, yeah.
Strangely similar, whereby his wife is injured and then she goes in the helicopter and gets taken away. And immediately you like, I fucking hate Nero because... they've taken, even though you're the one who put her on the bloody chopper, you're like, you have this overwhelming feeling of, I need to find her, the dodgy people have got her, and it gives you carte blanche to do anything.
Does it give you a reason on why they're dodgy?
Or do you just assume they're dodgy? My visceral feeling at the very beginning of the game was, you put her on the helicopter, the guy didn't want to take her anyway, you managed to convince her, they took him away, they're skirting around trying to investigate and research.
Yeah.
And any kind of time you touch base with them at the beginning of the game, it feels like it's their fault. I don't know where my wife is and she's been gone for this long. I haven't finished the game. I got no idea. They might be lovely. Maybe they're just trying to
they're
not
the heroes.
I know they're not, but maybe that's why they're at the beginning you do have a visceral emotive reaction to and games have to do it. So even like you said, I think with a game like World War Z,
it's
so simple. Get the humans away from the animals that are the zombies to safety, and you are like, I will kill every single one of these bastards. And it's got to be quick and snappy. You can't drag it out, right? It's got to be super fast.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I also think a game like World War Z is afforded some leeway by the fact that most people, when they play video games, they almost have different compartments of their brain where they can separate the stuff that's meant to be more grounded and visceral and emotional and the stuff that's meant to be more arcadey and repeatable content. And one of the weirder examples, I guess, I have for that is Call of Duty 4, which was where I remember the campaign for Call of Duty 4. Do you remember All Ghillied Up, for example?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, everyone was all in on All Ghillied Up. You go prone, you're crawling through the bushes, oh, don't get spotted.
Yeah.
You really care about soap and price and gas and
Macmillan.
Yeah. And then what do you do 10 minutes later? You say, okay, this is a good point to leave the story. I'm now going to go and play the multiplayer where I'm going to take my bright pink MP5, sprint around this map, and hope I kill 25 people in a row.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people are quite good at saying to themselves, hey, Left 4 Dead, like, Left 4 Dead, one of the most popular first-person shooters, one of the most popular co-op shooters, and most popular zombie games of all time, bar none. There's not really a story. They do some work to outline characters and put them in interesting scenarios, but there's not really a story there. No. That's just the part of people's brain that can say, do you know what, I'm going to accept this as almost this unique, repeatable, arcadey experience, and zombies, in that case, can also be quite good fodder for that.
Yeah, I mean, COD Zombies in all of its iterations is a great example of, they just put you in an environment. Just like the first time you ever played COD Zombies and you're in that shack and a shambly old zombie comes...
Was it World at War?
Yeah.
That was the first time, wasn't it?
Shambles up to the window of the shack. Maybe he's just looking for help. And what do? You shoot him in the face with a handgun. Maybe if you'd never, ever pulled your handgun out, he would have climbed through the window and gone,
thanks.
Look, I'm really injured. I'm hurt. Can you just help me out? But everyone just, if you don't shoot him, you stab him in the side of the face. So, you know, we just forget
that's,
all that.
That's why when we first encounter aliens, it's not going to go well. Because if aliens visited
in
Earth,
real life,
we'd be like, fuck, let's fucking kill them now.
Shoot them first.
Yeah, they might just be coming down to say hello.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
yeah.
never going to happen.
Why not?
Because if an alien has managed to make it to Earth from wherever they're from,
yeah.
they are definitely not here to say hello, because we will just be inferior.
If an alien has managed to make it to Earth and wants to kill us, why would they land on the planet? If they have the ability to travel across universes, plural... Is that a thing? Galaxies.
The universe.
The universe.
Oh, well, they could do and universes course, if you go for multi-universe.
Even better. Thank you, James. You saved me. If they've been able to travel all that way to the point where, like, outside of our known, all the shit that we can see, they're advanced enough to fucking blow up our planet from a bajillion miles away, probably. So why come?
Yeah, but they
why
wouldn't
actually
want to blow it up because we've got resources.
If they came here, they could probably travel at light speed.
Well, actually, what have we got?
Water,
coal.
Yeah, but and what do you want? What do you need water for? It's hydrogen,
might,
oxygen.
Might be thirsty.
Hydrogen is the most abundant element in the universe. Why the fuck would you travel to a small little rocky world and suck up their water?
What do you think they'd want with us?
See, I think it'd be more like this is a bit of a weird aside. I think it'd be more like how we go on safari. And we like want to watch lions and giraffes in their natural habitats. And we're
yeah.
like, wow, well, this is amazing. We love seeing animals in their natural habitat.
Like, we'd be animals to them.
No, we would. I think you wouldn't. We wouldn't travel to a planet that was completely run by ants just to burn all the ants. It'd be completely pointless. We might go there to look at them and study them and work out to try and understand more about our primitive selves.
Sure.
I don't think they'd come here with violent tendencies.
What if they wanted our water because they were going to, on their planet, turn it into an exclusive brand of water, like Fiji water for us? So on this other alien planet, all the hip-hop stars are drinking Earth water, and it's this exclusive product.
What is funny is I could actually see them as a tourism board. It would never be like the military of the aliens. It would be like a tiny little company that to them they like we were like completely insignificant, and they'd rock up and go, oh, we found a Goldilocks zone planet where we can send people on holidays. Oh, it's annoying because there's the local animals are kind of a bit aggressive, and they might annoy some of the tourists and they make too much noise, so they just wipe us all out so that they can send like wealthy people here and they just erase all the humans, or maybe they'll keep a few of us just for like to look at
ornaments.
Yeah. And they strip away and they go, no, you can stay there, but as soon as your technology gets too much again and you start annoying us, we'll just like put you back down to a lower level.
We do that to animals that live on our planet all the
time. Exactly.
Like, do you know what, that bit of rainforest would be perfect for this new hotel.
I think that's exactly what they might do to us.
Yeah.
So we are, wow, we are well off base here.
Zombies.
Far left field. It's good. Zombies all the way through to aliens taking over Earth.
But I agree that aliens can't do it, because the problem you have with aliens is you have to, again, like, people fundamentally, like, they have to be evil aliens.
Yeah.
You can't just go, aliens. I don't think people would do it. Like, gone are the days when you could have gone, like, just pick another country in the world and went, these guys, because people are like, well, hold on, why are we fighting those guys? I need a reason.
But then, do you think, if you do compare it to aliens, if you take the traditional, kind of traditional looking alien, big head, very skinny body, big eyes, yes, you are, I suppose, humanizing them very much like you would humanize a Nazi for being evil. But then if you had like some kind of xenomorph from the film Aliens, which is still very animalistic, would that be different? Would you then just be able to put a generic animalistic xenomorph?
That's what Call of Duty did. Do you remember in Ghosts, where rather than zombies, it was aliens?
Yeah.
And they created these
saying it's aliens.
I'm not, but it's aliens. And the way they designed those aliens, it felt like almost, you know, I didn't necessarily remind me of the xenomorph, but it was like, how can we make these aliens look and behave in such a way where people immediately see them and be like, yeah, let's just kill this thing.
But they kind of make them, but I think even though they don't, so with some aliens that are humanized, you might have a problem with killing them en masse.
Yeah.
But the things like
Mass Effect.
Yes.
But it would feel weird if there was a planet on Mass Effect you could go to and kill hundreds upon hundreds of a certain species.
Like a humanoid looking alien.
Because Mass Effect is all about, hey, here are all these different alien races, but look at how normal they all are.
But I want to say one of the things they always do with things like xenomorphs, and COD did it when they went for aliens, is they use things that we are used to, and then, so like almost like spiders, they'll give them too many legs, make them walk like a spider, and because we have a visceral reaction to creepy crawlies and spiders, if they're not mammals, and they're not, you know, even you go further afield, you got like mammals, birds, lizards. If you get to fucking insects, everyone's like, kill them! Kill them all! So, hey, you know what? I've always wanted it. Can I just...
Earth
a really
Defense
quick,
Force has that on lockdown, so no one else is stealing ants anytime soon.
A really quick, but I would, and I think I've said this before, but I would love to see a game of Starship Troopers.
Oh, yeah. There was one ages ago.
Was there?
Yeah, like a first... Let me clarify
for Jonesy then. A good one.
A good one.
A good
one. Where you're fighting the Arachnids. I would love...
Yeah,
them.
That
I
would be... That. That would be...
Sounds like you
awesome.
Want to play Earth Defense Force, mate. You want to play some EDF?
Maybe.
It's very
Steph,
similar.
Steph will get you on the next EDF stream.
It gets you into that kind of... it reminds you very much of Starship Troopers, having big, although it's bugs, spiders and ants and things like that coming at you. It's very chaotic.
Okay.
Are there any scenes set in the showers?
No.
Co-ed showers.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'm out.
Yeah. So, I suppose if posing this question then, with Back 4 Blood making a return, don't know much about that game so far, except that it's from
is just the Left 4 Dead 4 that's called Back 4 Blood, isn't it?
It's from the same Turtle studio Rock. That made the original Left 4 Dead.
Yes.
And Evolve.
There's nothing wrong with Evolve.
And we've also got Dying Light 2.
There was a lot wrong
that
with
was,
Evolve,
of course, showcased last E3.
I cannot bloody wait. Dying Light 2 is going to be wicked.
Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, massively looking forward to
it. Yeah, that was one of your sort of hot ticket items last summer.
Yes.
Because you were quite close to Techland at the time, I remember. Especially at Gamescom, you saw them for a couple of things.
Well, so they invited us to to watch somebody play some Dying Light 2, and it looks like... Do you know what? I know I already brought it up earlier, but like Rage 2 has done everything I think it needs to do to become a new, fully-fledged game in its own right. I think what I've seen of Dying Light 2 has done the same thing. They've actually toned down the zombie element to it, and the human element has come on strong. Like, we've just been talking about how you work that, and what they've done is the nighttime zombie. They've done a similar thing in that Days Gone did, in that zombies are much more powerful at night, like they were in the original Dying Light. Mm-hmm. But you now can decide whether you do something like at night to get into a building, to get to a room, whereas in the day, you know it's going to be full of zombies.
Right.
So you kind of might wait until nighttime specifically for that, but it's more dangerous.
Yeah.
Whereas in the original, I think that I just avoided night.
I avoided night constantly.
I
was petrified of night.
Me too.
Because they had that super kind of zombie that came out.
Yes, I hated it.
But then I think the original Dying Light did a very good job of instilling fear by using that kind of parkour mechanic.
Yeah.
Being able to to traverse the map quickly.
Yeah, don't look back. Just
don't
run.
Look back to what's behind you, because you know something's just as
it
quick.
It could have
as
been
you.
Called that, couldn't it? Don't look back.
But what they've done, I think, in this is they've taken that, they've ramped it up to the next level. Like the amount of parkouring in Dying Light 2 is even better. There's more vertical traversal, whereas in the original you kind of had to clamber up and then run. Whereas this, you can go up, down, like side to side.
Yeah.
But then, like I said, the human element is much more important in this, and the different factions and how you play them off against each other and how the world develops. And it actually looks like it's going to have more of a fully fledged, like, not morality system, but decision-making system built into the game, which is interesting because they seem to have pulled away a bit from the zombie side of it. But I think maybe zombie games have to do that to be viable. They have to, if you want to make a franchise, you can't just keep going, and then there are more zombies.
Well, I think that's why something like Telltale's The Walking Dead, although it's based off of the TV show...
Come on now, Jonesy.
It's an interactive story, I suppose. But...
We could do a whole podcast just about that. It's the case of Alex Jones versus Telltale Games.
Not games, though, are they?
But
should we Telltale interactive
Telltale stories?
Telltale stories.
The zombies are very secondary in the TV show and in that game. It's still based around the characters. So yes, it'll be nice to see that, yes, the zombies will be there in Dying Light 2, but you won't be just hacking through hundreds and hundreds of zombies, like in something like Dead Rising.
I was just going to say, like, I think the way Dead Rising gets around it is it feels like it's just a sandbox to have fun with killing zombies.
Yeah.
But that is not what a lot of games want to do. They want to have interesting stories and they want to take you on a journey. I mean, no one's playing Dead Rising for the interesting story and the dialogue and all that.
No.
I like Frank West as a character, but...
He is a lot of fun, absolutely.
Frank West, the photographer.
Yeah. He's covered wars, you know.
Yeah, he has. But I mean, outside of creating insane ways of killing zombies, and the handful of, they might as well be bloody zombies. The humans in that game seem like pointless. They're just there to shoot you.
Yeah. And the psychos, or do you mean the?
Just in the latest one, just like the guys who are trying to like nick stuff.
Oh, in four.
Yeah, okay. They're just like, they're basically just there to go, oh, this guy's got a gun.
Yeah.
So now you've got a stick and move. You can't just go up to him with a hockey stick and a stupid mask on. And, yeah. Do whatever.
Four, I found thoroughly enjoyable. I actually finished four without finishing the others.
I didn't finish four because, like we've already touched on, I guess there wasn't a huge appeal or a draw to seeing that story through.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of fun with four because I just like the idea.
Mm.
Like, hey, let's make a, like, just like, what's the film? It got remade by Zack Snyder.
Oh,
Shopping Mall.
Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The freaky fucking girl in the remake freaked me out in the beginning. Do you remember that?
Oh, in the house at the start, yeah.
Where she like, jumps onto her feet.
Isn't that the scene that the guy's watching in 40-Year-Old Virgin when he works in the TV shop and he's watching
yes,
Dawn of the Dead?
It is that.
He's like, bitch, get out the room! Bitch, get out the room! I like that bit.
Oh, when doesn't he throw her, or he slams a door on her and she falls over, and then he looks at her and she literally leaps back onto her
feet. I think
he like
bangs the door. She's like jumps and she like bangs the door on her or something.
And it's their kid.
Yeah.
That is the most terrifying scene in like a zombie film I've seen I think maybe ever.
Your own kid's
going to eat your face.
I mean, your own dog might. That actually happens. And they don't have to be zombies.
No.
Dogs eat faces.
You die in your house. No one knows about it. Your dog's going to eat your face. So
it's happened before.
The most harrowing zombie scene, I think, I can remember.
What's that?
Is in... What is it called? Legend. The one with Will Smith.
I am Legend.
I Am Legend.
Ah, oh, with the dog.
With the dog. Where the whole film is like, dog. Sam, come here. Sam, do that. And right at the end, when he chokes it out, he goes, I'm sorry, Samantha, or something like that. The cinema literally went, ah!
Yeah. Well, because you realise it's a girl.
It's a girl. It's not a boy dog. He just killed his girlfriend.
I hope not.
Killed his girl dog. And then the dog turned into a zombie as well.
He gets it and he's got it around the neck because he gives it the injection, if you remember, to try and cure it.
Oh, yeah.
And he holds it really tight and then she starts to like go crying. And then it starts to turn and starts to growl, and then he chokes her out. And then he says, I'm so sorry, Samantha. And that's when everyone like was going to cry. Because it's a dog that you never kill a dog, but it's a girl dog.
Jamie kicks dogs in games, so like poor Timber.
I shot
Timber got
dogs.
Booted.
I want to make sure that if I have a relationship with a dog, I'm the one in charge. I don't want no German Shepherds. I don't want no whatever Beethoven was.
You want a Bichon Frise?
I want that thing to be, you know, this big. 30 to 60 centimetres.
Max.
If I punt that thing, it's going to fly across the garden. I'm in charge. No one's eating anyone's face.
Like a
no
shih tzu.
No one's biting anyone.
Or a chihuahua.
I'd tell a lie. I used to be not a big fan of dogs because I grew up without any pets at all. No dogs, no cats, no goldfish even. I used to not like dogs. I was scared of them. So I was like, I just didn't think you
reasonable.
Could trust that thing.
Reasonable position.
You know when a dog opens its mouth and they think, I don't want to be friends with someone whose teeth look like that. That thing could rip my throat out.
I get a bit nervous when they start growling.
Yeah.
Even if they're playing and they're just like...
I think I have trust issues. Like,
oh no.
Have you ever been like lying in bed next to a loved one and realised I could fall asleep and they could just slit my throat?
Oh yeah.
I used to think about that all the time. And I think that's kind of tied to my weird relationship with dogs.
This is the last time I'm going to be awake.
It's just trust.
That is a weird
My brain goes to a weird point where like, this could happen. Are you going to sleep knowing it could?
I will say though, this is a kind of a weird one. Because I think I've watched too many films. When I get my hair cut, not too far from where we are now, a very nice barber's. Nicholas Barbers.
Yeah. Little plug.
He uses a, what do you call it?
Like Sweeney Todd.
What do you call the razor?
Cutthroat.
A cutthroat razor to just tidy everything up around the back and the sides. There's a point at which he like tilts your head back and he does, and he reaches around and he does this bit. And I'm like, he could cut my throat.
What's his name? Henry?
Nicholas, I think.
Nicholas.
Well, the barber's called, I think it's called Nicholas.
Steph, if Jonesy ever goes missing and Nicholas starts selling meat pies out of his barbershop.
Yeah, if I go missing, you come look for me there because he's done me in. But in the other barbers I've been to in the past have done the same thing and I feel so uncomfortable. It's the same feeling when you're standing at the front of the tube stop and you feel like someone behind you could just mule kick you in front of a train.
100%. Yeah.
It's horrible.
It's horrible.
You would never be able to leave your house if you think like that all the time.
I do think like that all the time. I don't like going to the bathroom on an airplane because if you get one of the ones that kind of on the side of the plane, you're like, what if this bathroom just falls off the plane? what if the floor falls out beneath me? Like, do you know when you're like
James Bond
the walls
style
feel week. So thin? You're like, I'm like one piece of plastic away from being 30,000 feet in the air.
I was just free falling.
Yeah. And I'd have my willy out and I'd splat on the ground and they'd be like, it seemed he fell out the plane while he was urinating.
Was that his dick?
I don't know why CSI would investigate the death of the man who fell out the toilet, but
they'd find you there and they'd be like, where's his dick? Over there.
Yeah, just go.
I don't want to know what separated me from my member during that splat.
Oh, man. We've digressed a little.
We have.
I suppose to finish off the discussion.
If
you've got another point, I was gonna.
I was just gonna ask Steph a question because there's a point on this list that I wanted to bring up because I'm hoping.
Actually, that's a good. In that case, I'll get mine out of the way first. Which I was just gonna say that because you guys were talking about Dying Light 2, and how much you're looking forward to Dying Light. I think everyone at this table really liked Dying Light 1.
Yes.
And for me, that game is actually emblematic of the whole wider discussion around zombies in video games, which is that I think we use zombie fatigue and complaints around zombie fatigue as a way of complaining about a game itself.
Oh, yeah. This is a point you raised me the other day, and I hadn't thought of it. I think it was a stellar point. Yeah. So I think, yeah.
And it's just to say, I think games that come along that do something fresh or interesting, and zombies happen to be the enemy, the antagonistic force, that happens all the time, and no one bats an eyelid.
Yeah.
And it's already happened twice this year with Days Gone, and a game we haven't brought up yet, Resident Evil 2.
When
Resident Evil's bad, zombie fatigue. When Resident Evil's good,
I love zombies.
It's a great game.
I love
zombies. No one has an issue with killing zombies. No one thinks that zombies need to go away when they're playing a good game, and I think that's the key differentiator. Zombie fatigue is just an easy thing. It's almost like on a GameSpot review where you got your pluses and minuses at the bottom. If the game's bad, of course zombie fatigue is going to feel like it's a part of it.
Yeah.
But when a game's good, it doesn't matter that you're killing zombies because the game was good.
Yeah, the one you think you said to me, and I was like, oh, that is so true, is I think I said, do you think we're just getting bored of zombies? And you said to me, ask me that question when Last of Us 2 comes out. I'm like, yeah, no one's going to say I've had enough. Everyone's going to be like, game of a generation.
What was the Days Gone, Resident Evil 2, and then going forward, Dying Light 2, and The Last of Us 2? No one's going to sit around any of those and be like, do you know what, I'm not playing it because I'm just tired of killing zombies.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no campaign for people to say, oh, take the zombies out of Call of Duty. We're bored of it. Like, it's the opposite. People fucking love
Get rid of the aliens, bring back the zombies.
And you ask me my feelings about Call of Duty Zombies? I didn't get bored of zombies. I just got bored of that mode. I'm just done with that game mode and the way it flows and the way it's structured. And I just don't have the time to dig into it anymore.
Yeah.
It's just too complicated for me now because I'm an old fart.
We played more of that cabin level from World at War.
Yeah.
Getting mates round, local co-op. We played more of that, like hours upon hours of that, than we ever did of any other zombie mode in any other COD. One of the reasons I think is the pure simplicity of it. And I think just... you could just replay it again and again and again. And then when they add more like complex things, I'm like, man, do you know what? Just give me a zombie and a machine gun and I'm happy.
I even thought that about Call of Duty's core, not to get too sidetracked, but Call of Duty's core multiplayer, where you go back to Call of Duty 4 and like there was something about the simplicity of you didn't choose your kill streaks. You had a UAV, then an airstrike, then a helicopter, 357. There were no death streaks. The perks were all very simple. You know, you had like stopping power or sleight of hand or whatever it was, martyrdom if you're a dickhead. I like the simplicity of it, and in some respects Call of Duty could have got away from me, but I still like it.
Well, I think that's just to make a point why games like Counter-Strike are still so popular, because you don't have the customization like you do in Black Ops 4.
You just
pick an AK-47 and that's the AK-47 you've got.
Character-based games, the biggest games in the world right now, character-based, like League of Legends and Dota 2 and Overwatch.
For, yeah, you get your character. Like, you don't change anything except for look.
You customize the look.
Yeah, but their skills are going to be exactly the same as the last time you played. Yeah. So I suppose
there is one point I went.
He wants to put you on the spot.
On the spot.
No, because I just wanted to let you two go at it. To be fair, Steph has said one of his bullet points that he tried to skate over. And I'm going to use the words verbatim because I think that's important.
Because Steph wrote up this little document.
Because I wrote up the plan.
Steph wrote for it. Dead Island was a wicked game.
Dead Island was a wicked game. I thoroughly enjoyed playing through that.
Make his case first.
Yeah.
Dead Island was a wicked game for me because of the setting that you were in and the fact that I was playing with friends. And it's coming back down to playing games with friends and getting that emotional connection to a game that you play with friends. I played the entirety through with three friends. It was a four-man co-op, and I played the entirety of that game through with three friends, and I only played it with friends. I've never played it by myself.
Okay.
So I think I have an emotional connection to that game because it was such an enjoyable experience. And we all had an Xbox. We all had, I think it was the Xbox 360 maybe, actually.
Not originally.
No, not original Xbox. Xbox 360, we all had one of them, and we all played it together. That's why I liked it. But I do know it was a buggy game. While we were playing it, we complained about how buggy it was.
Wasn't the multiplayer totally different to the main story campaign? Am I thinking of a different game?
I think you're thinking of a different game. Dead Island did have a pretty traditional co-op kind of setup.
Okay. I just remember playing a game with them where you can pick one of like four characters and you arrive on a boat and then you're on the island. Maybe I'm going crazy here.
I mean, that does sound like Dead Island.
But the original...
Dead Island Riptide had like a Defend the Waves... very much Call of Duty Zombies type.
Let's
game.
Move on in case I'm being crazy. Because
there were some things like, are you thinking of maybe like Far Cry 3, where there was like co-op mission, but it was like a separate thing?
Maybe, maybe I'm thinking of that. Let's forget that.
But the story was, as you put it, jank. It was a jank game. There were bugs everywhere. Zombies used to glitch out. Your weapons used to glitch out. The story was nothing. All I remember from the story is fighting some dude on a roof. That wasn't a zombie in the end. It was just a generic soldier guy. Mm. So they didn't do anything special, but playing it with my friends.
I liked it.
In a kind of setting, beach setting, and then you went into the city on the chapter 2, and then you went into, I can't remember, it was like a jungle forest type thing.
I think I stopped playing, I got a bit bored of the fetch quests, and I was like, okay, I think I'm done. But I had a lot of fun with the early stuff that I did play. But
yeah, most of it was a fetch quest.
But wicked game, Jamie.
Clear out this.
No, actually, I think you've both been fairly sort of balanced on it.
Well,
no, because both of you have said,
come at me.
Both of you have said that you enjoyed it and you had fun with it, but it had this problem and that problem. I can't argue with that. I can't tell you didn't enjoy it or that you didn't have fun. And I can especially see why Steph would have had fun if you played through the whole thing in co-op. I probably would have had a blast if I played through the whole thing in co-op. But trying to play that thing on your own and put up with some of its bullshit was like, it was throwing too many things at me that I didn't want to deal with. It was like, I don't find this open world particularly exciting to explore. I don't like the rate at which the weapon degradation and breaking happened.
I loved
the way the melee combat felt. I think it was very cool. As someone who's a fan of games like Condemned, like on the early 360.
It did feel chunky and heavy, didn't it?
Yeah, really like there was a... And same with Dying Light to an extent, unsurprisingly, because it's the same developer. I liked that system, although it did mean that as a side result, firearms felt extremely weak. So when you get to the point where they're a more regular occurrence, it's like, why am I picking up a machine gun? I'll just machete that guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was janky and it was buggy, and I thought the mission design was not only boring, but got old and repetitive extremely quickly.
Yeah.
And it just... The amount of reasons to no longer play that game, like, mount up too fast.
Yeah.
Which, ironically, the opposite of what I've got with Days Gone right now, which is I didn't really chime in at the beginning when you talked about Days Gone, but I largely agree with you, and I kind of don't want to or even can't stop playing it. I've probably put 20 hours into that thing, and it's like, I still want to go home tonight and play it. I'm going to go home tonight and play it, but I also don't like a lot of things about it. It's strange. It's interesting.
What are the main areas that you don't like about it? If I can pick your brains a little
bit. I just think that it's a weird sort of like, it's a very, like, maybe not to the degree of some other stuff that's come out recently, but it's a very kind of cumbersome, unsubtle, like, real drag of a game. I'm not going to say it's a mess, but I just think it's a weird like hodgepodge of different ideas that for me don't really come together and coalesce to form a thing that's greater than the sum of all of its parts,
right?
Which I think a lot of other games that have excelled in the genre, and I'd pick out specifically Red Dead Redemption 2, that for me was more than the sum of its parts. This Days Gone is its parts. And its parts are like, hey,
they're all
like,
too obvious as well, the parts.
Like a lot of the people were saying when it first came out, like, oh, it's The Last of Us meets Far Cry, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. It's don't get me wrong, it's very reductive.
Yeah,
but here's the thing. Don't make a game that's like The Last of Us if it's worse than The Last of Us. And who the fuck wanted another Far Cry?
You know? Yeah, to be fair.
Far Cry 6 will be on its way.
Yeah, I think narratively it's messy. I don't particularly like Deacon because I think he's far too inconsistent from a moral perspective that I can't really relate or empathize with him or his struggle. I don't think they do enough to establish his relationships with the people around him that I care enough. And I just think he's a bit of a dick.
You met, I think you said something to me which I hadn't really thought about, which was at one point you can send a 12-year-old girl, is it, to a slave camp?
I've done more story stuff, and that stuff actually got worse. Like, Deacon is this guy, there's a sequence very early on, this is like the first half now, it's not a spoiler, you guys saw it in your first stream, where a woman sneaks up on him and tries to attack him, but she's technically unarmed. She doesn't have a gun on her. And Deacon refuses to attack her.
Oh, no, you're talking about when she hasn't got any ammo.
She doesn't have any ammo. My bad.
And he says, if you had any ammo, you would have killed me already.
Yeah. I stand corrected. You're absolutely right. So but he refuses to do any harm to her because she's essentially an unarmed woman, and it goes against his moral code. Deacon's this guy with this moral code, like, he's doing it all because he loves his wife and he loves his best friend, Boozer, and so. But he's also kind of a bit cool, and you see these flashbacks where he's flirting with his wife, and I'm Deacon. But it's also like, yeah, I found a fucking 12-year-old girl with PTSD who was barricaded herself in her family home because she's so messed up in the head that she thinks her family is still going to come back years after the outbreak. Mm. And he's like, follow me, I'm going to take you to a fucking slave camp and I'm going to leave you here. And he feels guilty for it 10 minutes afterwards. It's like, you took her to a slave camp. And she runs away from the slave camp.
Surprise, surprise.
And like, there's all kinds of weird stuff like that where I just feel like he's inconsistent and the tone is a bit inconsistent. The open world design for me is boring. We talked a lot about, again, you compare, like, I think open worlds, the direction they have to move in the light of games like Red Dead Redemption 2 and Breath of the Wild. Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, you're not rambling
good,
at all.
Good. Go for it.
In the light of games like that, they have to move in a direction where they become more dynamic, right? They have to surprise us and they have to make us have interactions that feel natural and make us say, I didn't expect that to happen and I don't know what's going to happen to the world as a result of that interaction. It should not be, in my opinion, a question of, I'm going to look at the map and see how many more infestations I have to clear out. I'm going to set a waypoint and go to Nero checkpoint 4 of 12, because that sort of by-the-numbers, cookie-cutter, open-world design just doesn't sit well with me. That's where the Far Cry comparisons come in. Like, we're bored of that now. Games have improved on that. Yeah. Don't do that anymore.
When this, you even get to the point where, like, you're climbing towers and you can, like, look out and you can see, oh, look, there's something over there, and then you go to it. But then it's interesting because you say about the open world design, and I can think of games like Spider-Man, you know, last year that did had still had a similar sort of
Spider-Man
thing.
And that was one of the main criticisms people had about Spider-Man.
But I think you're right. I think they do need to be more adaptive and they do need to have be more interesting with how they utilise that.
And it's frustrating when you consider that this is a game that could be for some people 60 hours long.
Yes.
You just think you didn't need to do it. How many times was this game delayed? All for it to come out being this bloated, unnecessarily like uneven experience.
Yeah.
Just trim the fat.
And you wonder if they'd
give me a fucking 30-hour game with much less like side content, a slightly smaller map that is just more concise.
Yeah. And if they'd have put more time maybe into making things better, you know, in the main aspects of the game, rather than just trying to drag it out and make it 60 hours, you probably would have had a lot better time with it.
Yeah.
It does feel a bit weird in that nowadays people seem to say this game has to be over 50 hours or people are going to say it's a short game, it's not worth it.
I disagree.
I'll play a game for... I could play a 20-hour game or a 10-hour game and be like,
as long as it's got a solid story.
Yeah. That was one of the most incredible games I've ever played.
And that's what's ironic. So Days Gone's probably, 3-4 times longer than The Last of Us?
Yeah.
And as you said earlier, the introductions to both games are remarkably comparable.
Mm.
But how long is each one?
Yeah, the intro to Last of Us is much longer and it's slow paced, and you really get to grips with the characters and how they interact and everything. Whereas, Days Gone was oh shit, this happened, and then you're into this.
It was like a
8 years later,
a 90-second cutscene that weirdly dipped to black like 4 times in 2 minutes, and I was like, did they trim this cutscene awkwardly? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then flash forward.
Saving Grace is a dip to black in a footage.
Yeah.
Cut off the end, dip it to blank, save the day.
I will say before, so it doesn't all sound negative though, that I actually like the biker stuff more than I thought I would.
Me too.
The joke was, it's The Walking Dead and Sons of Anarchy. But like, there haven't been many games that have done the biker thing well, and I think it's cool. I like the bike itself. I like the way it feels. Could be faster, especially in chases, but I almost like the weight of it. I like throwing it around corners.
Yeah, I had the same issue when I started playing it. I felt like it felt horrendous to control, and it definitely felt like you couldn't sort of control it in any sort of meaningful way, and you could either go really hard over or you could barely turn sort of thing. But actually, when you kind of get into the main part of the game, you kind of get why it controls like that. It's because if it did control too arcadey and too twitchy, it would feel too easy maybe, or it'd feel too heavy and too slow, but they've got quite a good line between
it. Also, like a lot of the other elements of the game, improves dramatically as you upgrade stuff. Which is it's a frustrating, but that game is so much better when you have a slightly more upgraded Deacon and a more upgraded bike. And also the Freakers themselves are cool. Like, when you see a swarm of Freakers, like even 50 or so, you're like, wow, that's effective. I don't want to fuck with them. And if I do want to fuck with them, I need to know what I'm going to do.
Yes.
Like, well, that's what we did really before the end of the stream. We went to find a horde.
Yes, I told Steph where to find a horde.
Go and find this horde.
I said, let's go find this horde so at least we can see one in stream. And we went and just fucked with them a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you get murdered?
Yeah, I threw one Molotov cocktail at them and thought, oh shit, I'm going to have to run now. And then they swarmed.
Well, because you probably still have even your automatic weapon at that point probably took like 3 body shots to kill them, or 4.
Yeah.
Like, that's changed by the end of the game.
I really wanted to do, which I haven't done in the main game either, is to just go balls to the wall as fast as I can on the bike, just straight into a horde and see how far I get.
Yeah.
I bet it's not very far.
Probably not.
2 people in and then you just get like spilled into the middle of them.
Yeah.
But
it's an interesting game, and I'm glad it came out.
Me too.
I played it.
Well, thank you very much for that, guys. If you wanted to join in with the zombie discussion, you can find us over at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at All Time Gaming TV. So let us know your favourite zombie games. Let us know what you thought about everything we discussed today. What we do now is we just go through a couple of questions that you guys have sent us in. If you would like to send in your own questions, again, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, but use the hashtag AskATG so we can find that nice and easy. So the first question is from Mason, who is on Twitter. Would you mind sharing your favourite memories of working at ATG? And I thought that would be quite nice for you because you guys are sort of ATG veterans. It would be a lot harder for me to answer.
Is that what you're worth saying you don't have any yet?
No,
I've hated every minute.
I've got a couple of, annoyingly,
you can't talk about it, but you probably made a few yesterday.
Yeah.
You'll be able to tell people next week.
Yeah, I would say, can't talk about it yet, but that was definitely one of them.
Yeah.
If I go quickly then, I suppose what a favourite memory of mine so far in the 9 months I've been here is the acceptance of audience giving me feedback saying, like, welcome to the team, or you're doing a great job now.
Oh, cool.
That kind of thing, I think, is a favourite memory.
Was it specifically, like, the people who welcomed you, or the people you kind of won over time that meant more to you?
I don't really know. I suppose it's people that have watched the videos. There was a whole thing of the hashtag not my ATG when I started appearing on videos.
Who's this mayo sandwich?
Some negative feedback. So I mean, it you shouldn't let it get to you, but it does. But then when you start receiving those comments saying, oh, Steph's really loosened up, or Steph's doing a good job.
When you're the only one doing the streams for 6 weeks.
When I'm kind of dropped into the deep end of doing streams by myself. But then getting that feedback that people are actually enjoying the content that I'm included in. Now, that's a favourite memory of mine so far. In the 9 months I've been here. But I thought I'd put it out to you guys as you're, what, 6-7 years in now for ATG? Maybe five?
About five, I think.
For ATG specifically, not even four.
Is it not really?
Four? ATG will be turn four in September.
Oh Jesus, okay.
But me and Jonesy have known each other for about 6 years now, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. For me, it's an interesting one because I'd probably put in there, which is probably surprise you, probably E3 last year.
It doesn't surprise me.
Because although that was, I referred to it lovingly as Hele at the time, and it was pretty intense, and the schedule was a bit ridiculous. But when you mix together, like, going and doing that, and, you know, we'd been doing the gaming channel for a couple of years, and I think it was one of those things that it was like, right, we're going to the show. We've been invited to go to E3, and, you know, it was a work thing, and we were actually doing it, playing games and meeting people and all sorts. Even though it was hectic, I enjoyed it, and I went with you and Roshan. We had a time.
Yeah, we did.
There were some interesting things. There were some stressful things. There were some fun things. So it was
hard to forget, like, good memories, I guess.
Mm.
I'd put E3 up there as well. Like Jonesy was kind of getting at, it was almost one of those, I think we've almost made it kind of moments where, God, if you'd have said to me even 2-3 years prior, not only would I be a part of a gaming channel on YouTube, but that it would have taken me to E3, I'd have been like, I don't believe you. That seemed impossible. And E3 was a big enough thing in my head that there was even a point, you know, maybe July last year, where I said, you know what? This could all go away now. This could all, like, the floor could be, the rug could be pulled from under our feet. But I'd be like, do you know what? I fucking went to E3.
We'd never have met each other, Jamie.
I know, and that's why I'm glad it didn't happen.
And now you've been back to LA since.
Yeah, it's that stuff that definitely...
Gamescom was good as well, I think.
Yeah.
Smaller thing, but those sorts of events for me are the ones where it's like... And like we said, there was something that we can talk about maybe next week that I was like, oh, okay, this is really cool.
Like, yeah. But also, I'll just to throw a couple of other random things out there. I will just say that the cool thing about being on the channel over the years is that one of the nice things we had is that the people came first and the channel came afterwards, right? It wasn't like a boy band where they're like, right, we're going to make a boy band, it's going to be called this, who's going to be in it?
Yeah.
It was like Chris, Jonesy and I, we were almost forced to make a channel by the people around us because we kept talking about stuff in our spare time. It's like, just fucking start filming it, guys, please. Please turn this into content.
I think one of the first lists
I think that's nice, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I can't remember the name of the game. Rainbow Siege. That was one of the early ones we did. And just doing it, like sitting down and actually doing it, like those early days. We waited till everyone was out of the office. It was in our, we couldn't do it in work time because it was like, this isn't a work thing. If you want to start a channel, you need to do it in your own time. And we sat down with a recorder and we played the game. We got some footage and we recorded and we did it. And it actually went pretty well. And I think the video did okay. And then it was almost like, oh, wow. And there was a point about 6 weeks after that, maybe, or maybe 3 months, where we said, we've made this channel. It's viable. We've got it up. It's working. And they went, okay, we're launching it as an actual, an actual channel. And that was kind of surreal, I suppose.
Yeah, and I was just going to say on that note, I think what that led to was a situation where, and we also got very lucky with Rob, who I guess people listening and watching don't actually really know because he had his time with ATG, didn't really do any on-camera stuff. But obviously then Roisin and Milo and now you, Steph, like, everyone has kind of just sort of like fit in and found a place. And it's meant that, like, I think back to when we went and did the Mario Kart in VR, or when we went to the Hitman launch party,
yes,
or like whatever it was. It's like, we were going to cool places and doing cool things, but I was always going with the people that I'd want to go with anyway, just to have a good time. And we've always had a good time.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about it.
I forgot all about Mario VR. That was good.
That sounds awesome. I want to try that.
It was cool. It was very cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So I suppose the second question we've got here, there's only going to be two questions today because we were told that one of you have already had your question answered, so you'll have to go back to watch a previous podcast. But Raging Antibody again on Twitter says, what franchises do you think deserve an open world treatment?
I feel like that's a weird question to answer when I've just made a big case for why a certain franchise shouldn't have got the open world treatment.
Yeah, geez, this is rough.
It's a very difficult thing
because it's a completely different type of game, right?
Yeah.
Like taking a game which works often because of the way it's formulated and the way that the level structure and things work, and then to say, now make it open world. I can't necessarily see the positives.
Yeah.
I can usually see the other way more easily. Take a game which is open world and make it more of a linear, and I say, okay, now you're going to have a wicked game.
Yeah. My biggest one, if you don't mind me going first, the Pokemon games. I would love to see, rather than starting in Pallet Town and going through
the
first forest, having that more open world.
You basically kind of mean like less sort of like loading screens and the more less the feeling load of it, like a more a free flowing experience.
Yeah, rather big than game. More of a corridor world. Based yeah, game. Because Pokemon's always been felt very corridor.
I guess, piggybacking off that then, one that I could throw out there, and it kind of, before it died a death, it got closer to it. But there's something interesting for me, the fact that Mass Effect was never technically an open world game.
Yeah.
It had, you know, many sort of like big areas that had lots to explore, see and do and explore, and people to talk to, but it was never a truly free-flowing open world. And I would have been curious to see what they'd have done had they been set up that way, but they never got there, unfortunately. They had some very big areas in Andromeda, I'll say. Certain planets had a lot to explore, but
almost having the kind of, I brand it the kind of the bottle effect, where it almost keeps you in a big, wide-open world, then it kind of funnels you into a loading into the
next one. It's almost hub world thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
like sticking a line of glass bottles together.
We were talking about God of War the other day, which is a game that does have a lot of open areas. You think about all those times you could basically take the boat anywhere and, you know, land, but then it was also just very careful and clever with, like Steph was saying, where it bottlenecks you into certain smaller and more tight areas. Where how it hid loading screens, obviously, because there were no cuts or loading screens between anything. That was a very carefully well-designed experience that I'm fucking glad was not an open-world game. Because it didn't need to be. It would have been messier if it was open-world.
I would have liked if it felt slightly more open. There was a couple of times when I didn't like how constricted I felt in certain very specific areas.
Okay.
But I think that my general feel, I would agree with you, I liked how it did it. And it almost used like invisible walls that you weren't, because it made sense that you couldn't go walk through that part of a, you know, area. It did totally make sense. Maybe they could have expanded it just slightly, but maybe they will in the next
maybe
one. I think, Joe, I did think of one which I think would be maybe not true open world, but more like at least more open, would be a Modern Warfare game where you were effectively in a war in a city, and the city was a big open world city, if you like, and it was just felt much more open. Like you could, rather than you get to this point, enemies pop up, fight enemies, move to next point, fight enemies, move on, which is kind of like, I suppose maybe it wouldn't work and it'd feel like utter shite. But
I'd be, if nothing else, very curious to see what they did with it. But at the same time, like, that's why I find this a hard question to answer, because I can think of more examples of where it shouldn't or shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Like Mirror's Edge. Mirror's
that's
Edge.
Not an open
everyone,
world game.
Everyone played that first one and was like, oh, this could be an interesting open world game. I should be able to parkour and free roam everywhere. They made that game. It wasn't good.
No,
it
was not good.
Mirror's Edge Catalyst.
Yeah, I never played it, but
I did. I decided to buy it from an unspecified UK retailer who doesn't drop their prices as regularly as they should. And so I may have paid more than I'd like to admit for Mirror's Edge Catalyst.
Some games that I think like the linear structure works for them in a, like, so Titanfall 2 we always talk about is a fantastic game. If you gave it, it's not just like an open world game, it just wouldn't work.
Yes.
You need you needed to have been funneled like you were. And when you needed a more open, bigger area, they had a level which was a bit bigger and you could jump around more, but it just wouldn't have worked.
All the gameplay needs to change in a way that, you know, Metal Gear Solid 5 is an interesting example of a game where Metal Gear, for me, didn't seem like a candidate for open world treatment. And people actually don't really remember 5 as being an open world game.
It split its
progression up into these individual missions with finite start and end points. But they were two large open areas. And you could at any point decide, I'm going to free roam and just get the helicopter to drop you off in the middle of Afghanistan and then just sprint around.
It's funny, I genuinely don't think of it as an open world game.
Yeah. But it kind of was.
But it is, you're right.
But they also very cleverly they changed the design. Right, we're going to make traversal a thing. We're going to give people a horse and they're going to be able to take cars and hijack cars and drive them around. And we're going to sort of like change up the approach to the long distance kind of engagement side of the Metal Gear series and Metal Gear formula. We're going to give people a pair of binoculars. They're going to Far Cry style, you know, pick people out, you know, that kind of stuff.
A bloody brilliant game.
They thought about it and they made a lot of logical changes to the gameplay to fit the slightly more open environment it was set in. And that is maybe why it's sometimes hard to pick up a game as we know it and put it in open world, because other stuff would have to change too.
I think, it probably didn't change that much, but Hitman kind of went a little bit more open.
Sandboxy.
But that felt good.
Yes.
Because it and they did the right level of, somehow you always managed to be where you were supposed to be or end up where you're supposed to be. It didn't feel too big that you could kind of just disappear and go like, what am I doing here? It was always kind of, I suppose it moved you where you needed to go without feeling like you could just go wandering off and discover the edges of the world, I suppose.
They did a really smart job designing some of those maps in both Hitman games. Both the recent Hitman games, I should say.
Oh, yeah. The newer ones.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Thank you very much for joining me on the podcast, and thank you everyone for either listening on your favorite podcasting apps or even watching us on YouTube. If you wanted to leave a comment for us, then there will be a comment section down below on the video, or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at All Time Gaming TV. Don't forget as well that there is merch that you can buy, and there's loads of different designs for t-shirts, jumpers, and hoodies. We've got hoodies as well.
We have some hoodies.
Yeah,
we
do have hoodies. Sweatshirts?
Well. Sweatshirts. There's a lot, so there'll definitely be a link in the description on YouTube. Yeah. So,
how are none of us modeling that stuff yet?
Chris hasn't even ordered it.
We got pictures of fans wearing it, and none of us have any of it yet.
I asked about it yesterday, and yeah, Chris did say I don't think he's actually ordered it yet.
He hasn't ordered any of us yet, so we'll have to get onto Chris for that. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us today, and we will see you next week.
Yeah,
bye. See ya.